Grief is perhaps the most misunderstood human experience. We live in a society that expects grief to follow a tidy timeline, resolve quickly, and ultimately transform us into better, wiser people. But real grief doesn't work that way. It's messy, unpredictable, and refuses to follow any prescribed path. When profound loss enters our lives, we're often met with well-intentioned platitudes. Everything happens for a reason, or they're in a better place now. These seemingly comforting phrases carry an unspoken message, so stop feeling so bad. This cultural discomfort with pain creates a terrible isolation. When we're grieving, we discover that many people simply don't know how to be present with our suffering. They offer advice, judge our process, or urge us to move on before we're ready. The problem isn't that grieving people are doing it wrong, it's that our culture hasn't equipped us with the skills to approach grief with compassion and patience. Even the medical establishment pathologizes normal grief responses, considering grief lasting longer than 6 months to be potentially disordered. In practice, the timeline is even shorter. Many professionals consider being deeply affected after just a couple of weeks to be problematic. This medicalization of a normal, sane response to loss serves no one and adds unnecessary suffering to those already in pain. Our grief-illiterate culture fixates on transformation narratives, suggesting tragedies become triumphs with the right attitude. Media consistently portrays grievers emerging stronger from their pain. This positivity mandate has historical roots as a way to suppress dissent and avoid addressing suffering's true causes. Barbara Ehrenreich calls it the tyranny of positive thinking, where patients must remain cheerful during illness and financial hardship gets reframed as a gift. This deflects responsibility from systems causing suffering onto those experiencing it. What if there's a middle path between eternally broken and completely healed? A way that neither turns from pain nor rushes redemption, but honors grief's full breadth, which is really love's full breadth. Western culture's mastery orientation treats everything as problems to solve. While effective in many areas, birth, death, grief, and love don't fit this framework. Our determination to fix grief prevents genuine connection. What we need is a mystery orientation to love, embracing all its aspects, especially difficult ones. Speaking honestly about grief makes it more bearable. Truth-telling about life's difficulties improves everyone's experience. Understanding this cultural context helps you recognize that you aren't broken, the culture is. Your grief isn't weakness, but evidence that love has touched your life. Grief manifests as a full-body experience with real physiological effects. Neurobiology shows that loss alters our biochemistry, explaining the insomnia, exhaustion, and heart palpitations that accompany grief. Our respiration, heart rate, and nervous system become disrupted after losing someone who helped regulate these functions. Sleep disturbances are nearly universal. Many wake reaching for their person or experience that brief, hopeful moment before reality returns. Though crucial, sleep often brings nightmares. Recurrent dreams or repeatedly delivering death news in dreams represent healthy grief processing, your mind breaking down loss into manageable pieces. Grief impairs cognitive function too. Previously organized people put keys in the freezer, forget names, and struggle to read, a phenomenon called grief brain that occurs across many types of loss. This cognitive disruption is normal. You feel crazy because you're experiencing something profoundly disorienting. Your brain is attempting to make sense of a suddenly changed world. Grief rearranges your mind, making simple things confusing. Our brains function by creating relationships and recognizing patterns. In grief, the brain must process an impossible new reality that doesn't fit existing mental frameworks. The gaps in memory and thought represent your brain struggling to integrate information that cannot be absorbed by existing structures. Living inside grief, you know there is nothing to be fixed. The real approach isn't removing pain, but reducing suffering. Pain is valid and normal. Suffering emerges when we feel dismissed or unsupported in our pain. Pain gets tended, suffering can be adjusted. Pay attention to subtle shifts in how you feel. Though grief seems to erupt without warning, there are always early signs. Track what activities, people, or environments make things better or worse. Note anything that gives you even slightly more peace. A major cause of suffering is the self-harm we do with our thoughts. Worsness thoughts grind more stress into your pain, increasing suffering with questions like, "Why didn't I do something differently?" Wellness thoughts have the opposite effect. Your pain still exists, but they bring you closer to yourself with a sense of peace. By differentiating pain from suffering, you understand the connection between activities and their impact on grief. This creates a compass to recognize suffering and gives you a roadmap for decreasing it when lost in pain. Companionship, reflection, and connection are vital to surviving grief. Loss rearranges your address book. Expected people disappear, while even those who love you fall short. We need spaces to speak honestly about grief, and fellow grievers often understand best. Though fundamentally alone in your grief, finding others with similar losses shows you who can witness your pain. This isn't about minimizing your grief because everyone grieves. It's about finding your tribe within the wider community of loss. In this tribe, everything is welcome. We know we're alone, yet not alone in that knowledge. Finding others validates what you already know. Some things never get better. Companionship inside loss might be the only thing that truly helps. Ignore those who worry about your time with other grievers. After profound loss, the world divides between those who know and those who don't. Being with others who understand doesn't fix anything. Some things cannot be fixed, only carried. Survival comes through bearing witness, both to yourself and to others in this unexpected life. How do we live with grief without leaning on a happy ending? We end with love because love is all we've got. We grieve because we love. Grief is part of love. Love existed before your loss, surrounds you now, and will remain beside you. It's not enough, and it's everything. Living in grief means crossing the bridge between what was and what is now. In truth, we can hold on to nothing, but love we can carry. It connects what was to what is and what is to come, allowing us to travel between worlds. We often believe love will fix things, removing all pain. That has never been love's role. Love comes up beside you to support you in your pain, not take it away. By stating the truth, we open conversations about grief, which are really conversations about love. We stop blaming each other for our pain and instead work together to change what can be changed and withstand what can't be fixed. Some things cannot be fixed. They can only be carried.